Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. So if you've ever been to New York, you probably have not taken the time to look at the sublime beauty of the angels that are there with the exquisite sculptures. Today's guest, acclaimed photographer and author Sylvia Moss, has written and put together this beautiful book called Angels of New York, A Meditative Photographic Journey. In this book, she invites us to bask in the healing majesty of Gabriel, Michael, and the myriad of other angels that grace New York City's edifices and walkways, including treasures like little-known otherworldly bronzes by Salvador Dali. The book is sold is not only a dynamic art and architecture book, it is also a spiritual book. You can meditate with these angels in quite quiet reflection to still your mind, calm your body, and feed your soul. Sylvia Moss is an accomplished photographer, author, and healer. Her photographs have appeared in periodicals and newspapers throughout the United States. She is also a gifted sound healer and spiritual teacher with a passion for helping others grow and transform. So I know you want to meet her, and I'm going to introduce you and bring her on and get started. Good morning, Sylvia. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you, Randy. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, I'm glad to have you here. So this is a very, very beautiful book, and, you know, you actually say, there's a quote, that most of us in this busy metropolis are too preoccupied to see the enchantment all around us or to notice that even in the midst of urban chaos, we are guided by the spirit world. How did you begin to notice this, or did you always notice it?
No, I did not always notice it. I was one of the group that was running around. I began to notice it once I started working, photographing the actual angels for the book. I had been photographing many years before because I was basically an architectural photographer before I became a healer. And when it was suggested to me to do the book, I had already done, I think, three angels just as, you know, for exhibitions and that sort. And actually, when I was photographing, I realized, you know, even before I started doing the book, I realized that that the calm and the peace that that would bring by looking through the lens, because you have to be very focused, which is not a pun, but it's just you have to be focused when you're focusing.
Right.
And so that process actually woke me up to, oh my goodness, this is very calming. Because it actually became like a meditation. In some occasions, afterwards, I would feel totally energized and at peace. And so then I became, once I was awake to that, then I noticed it more and more and more and more. Once you in the chaos, if you just tune in, or if you just go sit with one of these statues, I mean that will do it. But just even the knowledge that energy is here in the city, just if you're walking around and you just remember it, it's a very calming effect. It's very strange, because there's all this the madness, so to speak, sometimes, other times not, all around you, I mean, right in front of your face. And you don't have to, one doesn't have to be involved in that way. You can observe it and help and do whatever you need to do, but it's a very interesting phenomena.
Yeah, and you know, there's even a picture here. You say wings for the IRT
yes.
above the subway stairs to trains number 2 and number 3.
Yes.
In 3 entrance walks. So yeah, I mean, even in the subway, there's angels.
I know. I mean, I was so shocked. And the interesting thing about that is that particular subway stop, I used to go to, because I had a couple of friends who lived in that neighborhood, and I would go visit them, or we'd go out to dinner or something. And I never noticed them. I never noticed those angels until I started photographing the book, and then one day I said, oh, my God, you know. Which is, you know, it's a very strange thing, the way the invisible world, I have found, the invisible world communicates with us. It's, you know,
They're those angels
were for maybe a couple of years before I even saw them. So that told me how we keep our blinders on. Like, we're so inner focused, you know, we're so busy in our minds that we don't see what's going on around us.
It's so true. I really like the picture of Mr. Sullivan's Angels and Hosanna in the Highest, which is on
yes.
the 13th story of a skyscraper. I mean, this is all the way across. There are angels all the way across the top of the building.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. So beautiful.
Yeah, that's really one of my favorite pictures. Yes, I love it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Why do you think that artists and sculptures used angels in the city? Now, I know some of them were not originally from the city. They were moved to the city. But why do you think people they wanted to use angels in their architecture?
I think one of two things. They were either religious people, and who, you know, that was part of their life, that they had religion and they believed in angels, or they felt the energy of it. I mean, they were advanced enough to know that kind of energy and art brings that energy into the environment. I mean, I think some people were advanced enough. Like the one wonderful example is the Bethesda angel. That's the one that's got, she's on the top of the fountain. There's the angel, and then there's right the next page is the full park picture. And I think it's called Angel. Yeah, the topic is called Angels of the Waters. Now that was specifically done for spiritual reasons, because that angel is that's probably the most famous angel in New York, or maybe the United States. I'm not sure. I mean, she's been in movies, she's been on television shows. I mean, it's really quite phenomenal how she's gotten around. But originally she was created, and she was commissioned by the city of New York in 1870 or something. I think it was installed in 1880 something, because there was a cholera epidemic, and they had to change the reservoir in New York City. And so to commemorate the opening, the big day where they cut the ribbon and the whole thing, to commemorate this day that the water would now flow from a different source, which was healthy and clean and blah, blah, they had this angel commissioned. And this is the reservoir that we still now use. It comes from upstate New York. And the angel was named Bethesda because it's a biblical scripture. It's John, I think I have it written in the book, it's John 5 something or other. Now, a lot of people, you know, are different religions than Christian. They don't read the Bible. But in any event, that's what this angel stands for. She stands for healing of the waters. I mean, so it's like so classic that there would be an angel that was for the healing of waters, and it was specifically done for that, for healing, which I think is phenomenal for that period of time. And the other fantastic thing, because she's gotten even more notoriety this past year, is that the sculptress who created this angel was a woman. And not only was she a woman, but it was a little bit of nepotism, I think. She was the sister of the parks commissioner at the time. But she was also a very great artist. And in that period of time, a lot of women, there were 12 very famous women who were artists, who were sculptors. And they all became very, very well known because their art was selling in the marketplace, I mean, which is phenomenal. And she was one of them. Her name was Emma Stibbins. But this year, because it was the year, I don't know if it was the year of the woman, or I can't remember what the exact title was, but the New York Times did a whole series of obituaries of famous women who were not acknowledged when they died. And she was one of them. And a friend sent it to me. And it was just phenomenal because I learned things about Emma Stibbins that I never knew before. I saw her picture. And it was just quite, so if anybody's interested, Google the New York Times for Emma Stibbins, and you'll find out a lot about her. She was a fascinating woman. She moved to Rome, and she became the mate of a very famous actress. And that was another reason that was in this obituary, because they were acknowledging a lot of LGBT women. And so, which she was one, which is in that period of time, unbelievable. Also,
it is unbelievable.
And she was out. I mean, it was common knowledge, and they would have breakfast for all of their theater friends, and it was that period. Yeah, so it was very kind of exciting. Movie script time, like. Yeah.
I also like the Archangel Michael that's keeping watch.
Yes.
He's at Greenwood Cemetery. He's beautiful. He's sitting
up
there. He's so statuesque. He's beautiful.
Yes, he's very, yes. And that's a very famous cemetery. A lot of very famous people are buried in that cemetery. And actually I went there because I knew it would have a lot of angels, because it's a very Victorian cemetery, very famous. And it's like being in a private park. It's so gorgeous. It's landscaped and hills and lakes. Actually, it has lakes all around it. So it's very fabulous. But when I went looking for angels there, I found all these very famous people and, you know, learned about their lives. So it was a very interesting adventure, not only bringing these beautiful images and the energy of these images out into the public, but also learning all the history behind it. It's quite fascinating, yeah.
It is fascinating. You did a couple of angel photos from churches and cathedrals.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And I would imagine there are several. There must be an angel in probably every church and cathedral that has a stained glass window.
Yes.
How did you decide on what to select for the book?
Well, I selected. This is, you know, I don't like to say this, but I selected the pieces that were the best art, because I took must have been thousands of pictures, of course. I mean, I would take photographs, and then I would stop and write a while, and then, you know, then I would go back because I just couldn't be out in the field all the time. And also, it was winter. But so amongst a lot of them, I didn't use them because they just didn't, they weren't high enough quality in the art, and that's basically how I did. But also, the way I found out about them was that people would call me, and different people who were into spirituality and into architecture, that they knew where some of these angels were located, because some of them were in very obscure places. Like the one, the angel of compassion. That's, I mean, no, I don't know if anybody would ever know it's ever there. It's in Brooklyn Prospect Park, and it's behind the lake, the ice skating pond, in front of a parking lot. Now, I mean, you know, obviously the angel was put there in a very beautiful setting, but then, you know, things changed. So she was, it's a very obscure monument. And so, but it was a very fine piece of art. And I would, and I also researched a lot of them before I went to take them, because it was, some of them were a little bit of a trek. And some of them you had to photograph them in a certain light in order to get the right shadows. And so some of them were like 6 a.m. photographs. So I had to make sure that they were going to be the right ones to use. Yeah. It's a very interesting question.
You put so much work into this book, but it sounds like you really enjoyed doing it.
Oh, I love doing it. I love doing it. It took me 17 years total from the concept of it, you know, from the beginning. Because I'd start, as I said, I would start and I'd stop. But, and then I think I even, towards the end, I took some more, you know, because I found more. So it was quite wonderful.
So then there's this section where you do Angels of the Dream World with Salvador Dali's bronze sculptures. They're really, really interesting. So he did like a male and a female.
Yes.
And I love his interpretation. The male's a little strange.
Very strange.
Not so much
very,
the female.
Very difficult. He was very difficult to photograph. Not difficult technically, but emotionally. Because I had to, again, you know, stare into the lens, because you have to get the right focus, you have to get the right light, you have to change this, you have to change that. So you're constantly looking in the lens. And that face was very disturbing after a while. Very disturbing. So I'd have to stop. It was fascinating. The actual photograph, when it was first taken, they are black. They're black bronze. They're absolutely incredibly beautiful. And I have a very good friend who's a very fine photographer. And he had developed a system of develop, because he was a black and white photographer, and so he developed all his own film, of course. And he created this system, the solution that would turn the image into what you see. Because for people who are listening, the image is silver, and it's kind of wavy, and it's a very beautiful, and it's very iridescent-y, even on the paper, even in the printed book, which is, you know, right, unusual to get that kind of quality. But the angel, if you were to actually see it, would be black. They were both black, and they were online. They do not live in New York City. They live in Luxembourg, and they were on loan to a museum that never really got off the ground. It was a fabulous museum. It's called the National Catholic Museum or something of that sort. And these angels were on loan for several months, and they were written up in a local newspaper. And a friend saw them and sent me the local newspaper. And, of course, I was over there within a couple of days.
So it looks like, you know, it looks like one hand is a fist. The other one looks like a hoof almost.
Yeah.
Very strange. And and just to the listeners, the head is like a folded triangular shape. The face, actually, is a folded triangular shape. So why did you find this so disturbing?
There was something about the angle of that was like the face is like a mask, and the way Dali had tipped the head or something, it was very sinister.
Mm.
It felt very sinister. Now, I may have been picking up on the energy, because there's a lot of my closest friend who actually sent me the article said, they're not sinister. He's not sinister to me. She says, he's very sexy. Because his body is very fluid, and he's got these he's got this wrap around his, you can't see it in the photograph, but his hips has got this sari kind of wrap that drapes out. I mean, it's an amazing piece of art. But maybe I was picking up on what Dolly was channeling, because it's just the angle. Now the other one, the female one, she was just a delight. She didn't scare me whatsoever. But what's interesting about her is in the photograph, the way the light hit and the way this developing solution turned her colors into silver and the reflections, she looks like an ET. Because there's a reflection of kind of like a slanted eye. There are no eyes on her.
Oh, yeah,
whatsoever.
Right. She has the head shape of an ET.
Yep, the head shape. And so I loved her because she's just very, very funny. And to the listening audience, she's a cubist shape. So her body is not fluid. Her body is in blocks. The blocks are twisted. They sit on top of each other. And so she's a very, very interesting piece of art. Yeah. So
she really is. It's amazing how he made the man fluid and the woman blocky.
I know. Isn't that, I mean, genius man. What was surprising to me when I did the research on him was, which is in the story in the book that you were reading, that his connection and love for angels and his interpretation of where they came from and that kind of thing. So he was very very unique, shall we say.
Oh my gosh, yes. He really saw the world in a different way.
Totally different way.
Yeah. And I have to talk about Elsie's angel because she is beautiful. What a face. It's a little girl. It's a little girl angel, and she's absolutely beautiful.
She's very realistic, and you would almost think, I mean, it's even still difficult for me when I see her, because I have her hanging on my wall. I have several of my photographs, hanging, not all of them. But when I see her, I mean, she looks real. I mean, she's so delicate. She she is a baptismal font. Actually, in a church that I used to attend, she was the very first angel that I ever photographed. And I photographed her because the church had asked me to photograph her, because they wanted one of the priests. It was an Episcopal church, and one of the priests was leaving to get married, actually, and they needed to give him a going away present. And so they asked me to photograph this angel, and that's what really started my career of photographing angels. And the other, and this is just a really funny kind of piece of trivia about her. The woman that sculpted her, she lived at the time when she was alive. She lived down the street from where I live right now, 2.5 blocks away. And the reason that she's in that church is because she went to that church. It's called St. George's Church in New York City. She went to that church, and when she died, her husband, who was also a sculptor, a very famous sculptor at the time, when she died, he took that piece of sculpture and he made a platform for it to put it on and donated it to the church. She died very early, very young age, yeah.
Well, the way that you photographed it, you really pick up on the shadowing, and it's beautiful. I mean, her hair, every single hair on her head.
I know.
It's incredible.
It's quite incredible. She's very special. And the reason she's called Elsie's Angel is because that's the name of the sculptor who lived down the street from me, Elsie Ward. Yeah. And she had gotten several awards in her time. And a water fountain in St. Louis. The World's Fair. And when the World's Fair was in St. Louis in the 1800s. I mean, a water fountain. It's so sweet. The things that some of these artists had done. But yes. And the other thing about the book is not just a book of architecture and angels. It is a healing book. And that's what became so more, it's kind of a strange thing to say, it became more fun doing it. I didn't know that it was going to be a healing book until I was halfway through it. And actually, the woman who was editing it at the time for me, it had several editors because it spanned a very long period of time. She said, now you must tell people how to use the book. And I just, it was a telephone conversation. And I just paused and I said, I'm not going there. I cannot do that. I said, I've done enough. I mean, I was just like, I must have been tired at the time. I said, no. I said, I don't know. And I hung up the phone, and this wave of information just channeled right through me. This is how the book is to be used. It was quite interesting.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I said no. And it just like, whew, because, you know, it was out of left field. And it said, this is a healing book, and this is what you do, and this is what you say. And I wrote it down immediately and typed it up. So it is
amazing.
It is a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's amazing how these messages come through, and it's like, what I was going to say is that, you know, I write books, and I can understand the fatigue. At some point, you go, just get this book out. You know?
I know, exactly.
It's tiring.
Enough
Very
already.
Tiring.
Yeah, it is tiring. It's those last few months, those last few years. With the editing, it's because it's like, you know the material in your sleep, and it's you have to go back over it and make sure, I mean, as you know, and make
over
sure.
Over and over.
I mean, it's like I said to myself and my editors and other people around me, I said, does every writer go through this, like, you know, or am I being really obsessive? But, yeah, it's really.
I'm in the middle of a rewrite, and oh my gosh!
Oh.
I just keep every time I go over it again. I'm like, okay, I'm finished now. I'm going to do a reread of the whole thing, and now I find all this stuff I want to fix. I'm going to rewrite
God.
It again.
It's
just crazy.
But are you? But do you enjoy it? I mean, do you enjoy what the book?
I enjoy it to a degree. Yeah. I mean, I'm compelled though. I just can't stop. You know.
I know.
Yeah.
When it starts,
so was there any other
flowing through you?
Oh my gosh, yes. So you, you're a sound healer and a spiritual teacher.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Ah, well, my sound healing is one of my favorite things. I don't know if you or your listeners know about crystal singing bowls. Do you know about Randy?
Yes.
Do you know about? Yes. Okay. So I have the alchemy crystal singing bowls, which are crystal and semi-precious stones and minerals are mixed together. So the basic singing bowls are that most people know are white frosted crystal bowls. But these are, some of them, I'm looking at them right now, some of them are clear and some of them are opaque. And, of course, they're different colors depending on what stones were mixed with them. And they're the stones mixed with the quartz crystal, and then they're fired. So they have several different layers of healing properties. That's why they're called alchemy, because there's the healing properties of the stone, there's the healing properties of the sound that it makes. So, and then the healing properties of crystal. And I use them in my healing sessions that I do, and I do sound bath events. And I've been doing, in the past year, I've expanded my sound baths to bringing in the Ascended Masters. And I channel them first. I create like a temple, and we do all of that. And then the people come, and then so that the space is already prepared as a temple. And that energy is here. So it's again like the angels. When you bring the energy in, you know, it just shifts everything, and I do a lot of what we call journeying within the sound baths. So a lot of people do sound baths and they're just playing instruments or they're just and doing prayers. But this, I do a journey which is taking people on like a spiritual trip, like it's meditation, but with the bowls. And I also have a very good friend who's a professional musician. She's a flutist. and, well, some people say flautist, and she's also a music therapist. So I have her come whenever I can, because the combination of the bowls with the flute and some percussion instruments is just, it's otherworldly. I mean, it just takes you right out, and is very powerful. So I'm going to start doing them online in the fall. I have to get I have to get special microphones, because some people will try to do the crystal bowls online, or, you know, in a Facebook Live or something of that sort, and the bowls are much too high a pitch, and so the quality is like really screechy. So it's very harmful to the ear, so to speak. So I have to get some special mics. They're just they're regular mics, but you have to have special ones to do that. So I have to get that set up first. But my newest thing is, because I'm a healer, I do vibrational sound healing, but it's, the basis of it is energy and the chakras. I work with the chakra system, and also I go into the body and with the organs. But using the sound accelerates the healing process so much that it's just, I hardly have to do anything anymore. It really is kind of very interesting. But because of the success of the book, and I was going to do a second book called The Angels of Rome, and I was able to go to Rome in 2009 because I had a friend who was living there for 6 months. And so she invited me, and of course I went because I could start my second book. So I was there for 3 weeks and photographed hundreds and hundreds of angels, because I had no idea that Rome, every corner has an angel. And of course,
really?
Every church has about 5 angels, and some of them are very famous angels. I mean, there's a bridge near the Vatican that is, it's called the Bridge of Angels, you know, the translation, and it's, all the angels are done by a very famous sculptor by the name of Bernini, and he's got an incredible life. And so I photographed all these angels, and I've made it into a card deck. And the card deck is almost finished. The angels, the cards are finished. The designer now is working on the book. And they will be out for Christmas, hopefully. And it's called The Angels Speak. And each card, so I'm using the Angels of Rome, all the images that I photographed in Rome, and then the book, Angels. So it's a deck of 53 angels, and then with a poem. So it's a 54 card deck. And it's for healing. It's a lot of card decks. If anybody's not familiar, they're similar to tarot cards, but they are not tarot. Mine are what they're known as wisdom cards, which is similar to an oracle deck. And what I did with these is that I channeled each angel to give a message for the card, because in wisdom cards, there's always a message either on the back or, you know, a short message in the front. And I asked each angel, I went into meditation, and each angel actually did tell me what to say. I mean, I knew they were not my words. It was not my mind, because they use some words that I would not have used. And they're very short, and they're very, very beautiful. And so then that's at the bottom of the card. And because they're architecture, I wanted to make them look heavenly. And so this artist that I chose, who was just a genius, and she did all this amazing cloud work on these angels, and they're totally heavenly. And so I have archangels, I have regular angels, I have divas. The nature divas, angels, and there's 4 different sets: regular angels, archangels, the divas, and higher angels. Angels that, there are some angels that work more on the earthly plane that help us with our earthly work, and then there are angels that help us for our higher self and the higher chakras. And so I have those angels because I've done some studies with this woman who teaches not about angels but about higher work. And so like your loving presence and your heart flame and things of that nature. And so those angels are there in this deck, and they are just, I'm in love, so should I say.
And, it amazes me how much, not personality, what am I trying to say, how these sculptures actually have a conscience. Consciousness. That's the word I'm looking for. So, you know, I guess as the sculptor is creating this, they're putting their consciousness into this object, or their interpretation or something like that. Because how else would an object get a consciousness?
Well, I have a theory.
Okay.
After I take a sip of water here. It's very warm and muggy today in New York City. In the prologue, which is my introduction to the book, I write about this because it's what I realized when I was, you know, focused in that lens when I said earlier in the conversation, I said it was like a meditation. I realized that the consciousness, which is exactly what you're just talking about, that the consciousness of the angel, the essence of that, was channeled through to the artist. And that is in the piece of art. And that was the big thing that I discovered in doing this spiritual art. I don't know what it's like with other art. I'd have to really go to the museum and see and look at other kinds of art and see if that, I'm sure that, because every piece of art, this is my interpretation, that every piece of art is channeled from someplace, you know, within the artist or with whatever. But the angels, the essence of the angel came through the sculptor, and that was delivered in the art. And it is my belief that's why the book did become a healing book. Now, I don't know if it became because they were giving me that information or what, but that essence, that energy is in the book. So that's why if you sit and if you sit and just be quiet like in a semi-meditation and just look at different pictures, you will get a healing. That's why you had the reaction that you did to some of these pictures, like Elsie's angel. Elsie's angel is probably the biggest healer in the book.
You can't look away. You cannot look away from her.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You cannot look away from this angel. She's hanging over my bed, by the way.
Beautiful.
She's really. And the crazier thing is that my close friend who gave me the articles on the Dolly angels, when she saw, this was when she was in exhibition, when Elsie's angel was in exhibition, when she saw them, she said, "Oh my goodness," she said, "she looks just like I did when I was a child."
Oh my gosh.
So I gave it to her. And she has it hanging next to her therapy chair. She's a therapist.
Incredible.
She has photographs of herself. Then she compared, and it looks just, I haven't seen the photographs, but and her family says it's true, that she looks just like, at that age, which is even crazier. The hair.
She must have been beautiful.
She was.
She must have been beautiful.
Yeah.
So when you begin to do the online crystal bowl healings, I'd like you to contact me because we'll have you come back on, and then we'll talk about that because I'd really like to know more about that. And I've had sound healers on my show in the past. I think two of them, but they use sound in a different way. They pretty much compose. The songs based on what your frequency, based on the needs of your frequencies. So they go through your frequencies and see where it needs to be changed, and then they compose music or sing or whatever to reach those particular frequencies to even you out, make
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
So that's a different kind of sound healing.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it is and it isn't, I think, because I think that when because I will do little melodies, you know, just if I'm going to be doing an event, I will go through my bowls and find certain notes that are right for that particular evening. And so it is a similar process, because when I play the bowls, I play them specifically, especially in private sessions. I will play them specifically for certain things, but I don't have the knowledge to create a song, because I'm working intuitively on what that person's body needs. So it's very similar but different. It's very interesting, because I won't use every bowl on every person or on every part of their body, which is interesting that would happen. So you're telling me that, I'm fascinated by it, because it's very similar and different, which is really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I also use the chimes, the French chimes, which are just exquisite.
I can't wait to hear this.
Yes.
I'm excited. Yeah, I can't wait to hear this. Do you still do the live groups in New York City?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just did. When was the last one? I just did one a few weeks ago where I do them up maybe a couple of every times a year. I will do an event where I call them a crystal bowl jam. It's like a jazz session, but it's with crystal bowls, so that people can come, and I put bowls on the floor, and people who come, they just intuitively choose the bowl that they want to sit in front of to play, because these bowls have a personality, just like the angels. The bowls.
So
I
just want to get some information before the show ends.
Oh yes.
So do you announce these on your website?
Yes,
when
I do.
You're having these. Okay, and what is your website?
My website is Sylvia, SylviaMoss.com.
Oh, perfect.
SylviaMoss.com. And there's an event that I think it's a very beautiful website. It's brand new a couple of months ago. So you can just go through, and there's a lot of angels on it. And there's an event page, but then there's also a store page where it has the book.
Okay.
But also it has the angel deck. I'm offering a pre-sale special. It actually ends tomorrow, but I am going to extend the date. But the official ending is tomorrow, that you get the deck. You get a signed deck, and for $75, a signed deck with a 6 weeks class. I'm reading from it. Unlimited email support during the class, an angel meditation, and a sound bath activation, all for $75. Then the sound bath activation would even be online or in person. You could do it. And so you can get you wouldn't be able to get this after the deck has been published. I'm doing this as a special to, you know. And it has and it has some pictures of the deck of cards. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to get cut off in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
So
okay.
I want to
thank you so much
for being my guest. This has been so interesting to me.
I'm so glad.
It is I love doing shows with topics that I've never covered before, and this is so unique. So I think it's been wonderful. Yeah, I love
I'm
that.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. Thank you,
Randy.
But
anyway, I want to thank you so much, and get back in touch with me when you have something else going on, okay?
I definitely will. Definitely.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
We are out of time, but if you have any comments or questions, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.